Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots of people once again joining me throughout today's show. John Hutchinson will be here to respond to those explosive comments from Danny Rose. Plus, I've asked Shaka and Craig to pick their best five-a-side team with players that they've ever played with. We start, though, with the big news in Spain as Sid Lowe joins us. Joan Laporta running once again for Barcelona president. Why is this significant?
Well, that's what he says. That's what he says is his intention. It's significant because, in a way, the very fact that he's prepared to tells you something about the state of the club, tells you something about the fact that he thinks that the situation has got bad enough that he has a chance, because he believes there's a very conservative electorate, one that under normal circumstances probably wouldn't vote for him. He said this when he stood last time, and that he wasn't going to do it again, but the fact that he's back in, I think, tells you something about the chaos at the club. It's also particularly significant, of course, because this is the president that set up that team from 2008 onwards, that became the best team in Barcelona's history. And it was led, of course, by Pep Guardiola.
Which leads me beautifully into this quote, Sid, which said, "I would really like Guardiola's return, but right now he's at City and it's a decision he must make. He is a reference point for this club and many supporters would love to see him coaching Barca again. When the moment is right, I will speak with a person we believe should be Barca's manager from 2021. Not exactly hiding his hand too much there, Sid. He wants Pep back. Would Pep go back?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the important thing, isn't it? That quote is expressed in the conditional. I would love Guardiola to come back. And notice how he says, we will talk to the right man when the time comes. I think this is an illustration of the fact that this is an idea that's in the back of his mind that will never, ever go away, because they were very close. They did get on very well. They had very similar ideas. They were, of course, both committed Cruyffists, very good friends of Johan Cruyff before he passed away. I think as well, he has to say this because he knows that Victor Font has positioned himself as the most significant of the opposition candidates, and he has Xavi. So the obvious next choice would always be Xavi. So Laporta has to kind of distance himself from that. But I think what he's expressed, to be perfectly honest, is his hope, his desire, and maybe a tiny smidgen of optimism. But I don't think this is anywhere near the stage yet where we can talk about this as being, if you like, kind of a plan that's in place or a conversation that has happened yet.
Sid Lowe, thank you very much. For a lot more from Sid, you can join him on the Gab and Jules podcast, which, of course, dropped yesterday. You can check that out over on the website. Now, in yesterday's Extra Time, we had a question coming in asking Frank to compile his best five-a-side team from the players that he played with at Chelsea. And as we welcome Craig and Shaka into the show, we thought we would open that up to you as well, boys. Not just Chelsea, Craig, but your old career. Give us your team.
Well, who did Frank pick?
Well, not you.
Well, I know that. I wasn't looking for selection into the Frenchman's team. I was just intrigued. That was all. Interested.
Right, go on, get on with it.
Okay. So, obviously, I couldn't put the big man in, Shaq. So, I went for, you know, there was a lot of good goalkeepers, but I went for Andy Gorham. I went back to the national team. And I think Andy just pipped it over Jim Leighton for me, and he was a tremendous player for Rangers for many a year. Great goalkeeper, great shortstopper, so Andy was in goal. And then I just filtered it with attacking players, some who could defend, some who couldn't. Ruud Gullit has to be in there because he was one of the greatest players of his generation, for sure. Gianfranco Zola was one of the best five-a-side players, and 11-a-side players for that matter. But when you got him on a five-a-side pitch, he could showcase all those talents that you had. You really couldn't put a tackle in on him. Then I had, who did I have? I had Henrik Larsson and I had Gianluca Vialli. It was a toss between him and Ravanelli, but I went for Gianluca for his talents and putting the ball in the net. And obviously Henrik Larsson was one of the most talented players to ever come out of Sweden, along with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. So I had to leave a few guys out, but they're that would be me, my very attacking, has to be said, five-a-side team.
Blimmin' heck, Craig, you took it seriously. You're feeling all right.
I didn't take it seriously. I got a text message about 5 minutes before we did this segment, and I just went, bish, bash, bosh, 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 have that. So I've definitely left some players out.
I tell you what, though, that's a bit special, mate. That's a good team.
Yeah, well, I thought about putting Paul Lambert in for, you know, his holding mid, because he was one of the best holding midfielders of his generation, if you wanted to shore it up. But I thought, well, that's a bit boring. And I don't do boring. And I say, you've got people like Di Matteo. There's a host of players. I mean, I was lucky. Maybe they were lucky. I don't know. But that's the team I've selected.
I'm guessing Hullet is your player manager, yeah?
No, he's just, I'm his manager, and after he does a job for me, I'm going to leave him out in a very important game, and then I'm going to sell him. Maybe that will sound familiar.
who would you have as your manager, Craig? The best manager you work with? Would it be Jim Smith?
You're taking this too serious now, aren't you?
I knew I'd pushed my luck too far.
I don't know, it's a difficult one, because I enjoy working with Glenn Hoddle. And for somewhere down the line for Glenn, it sort of petered out. But he wasn't the greatest man manager because, you know, it's a difficult skill to have. I just thought Jim, from being old school, Jim was magnificent. And I would say Jim Smith and Wim Jansen at Celtic, who we had great success for 12 months with, but different types. But I would say probably those two would spring to mind, yes.
Let's go to Shaka, and I have to reveal that Shaka forgot Dwight York in his first team, so he has been a late substitute into this one. I think Trevor Sinclair was sacrificed, Shaka.
Yeah, listen, I wasn't told that international teammates also counted. I thought it was just club leaning on Frank Leboeuf having to pick
from
Chelsea.
You need to be told everything. You're not the brightest. I mean, work it out, lad. Your best teammates ever.
Listen, I'm just telling you what I was told.
You were told best
club teammates. I went with club teammates, and then that changed, so I included Dwight. That's all. Trevor's on the bench.
Do you want somebody to come up to Boston and write it down for you in a piece of paper or what? even Stevie Nicol could work that out. Who was your best teammate?
That's not the text I got, but. To your point, I'll just go into my team rather than listen to Craig ramble on. I picked myself in goal because I want the appearance money, let's be honest. And then in front of me, I have Rio Ferdinand, who easily the best defender I played with, and also the best pass of the ball out to the back, so I needed him in front of me. Frank Lampard, I don't think I need to explain that, given his record. And then Alan Shearer, the Premier League's all-time leading goal scorer, as my point man. And as you mentioned, Dan, I included Dwight, both for his goals that we saw from him at Manchester United, but in the latter stages of his career, and in particular with the national team, he was able to sit in midfield. He actually sat in the middle of the back four at times. So for his goals and his versatility, Dwight was included. Unfortunately, that meant Trevor Sinclair, who equally versatile, had to take a spot on the bench.
You've got six players.
Thanks very much,
Shaq.
Gentlemen.
Has five players and one on the bench. You can't count.
Well, you included that. You included that great Italian international, versatility. Who do you play for? Versatility.
Oh my God! More of the dad jokes. You can join us on Extra Time. You can check that out with Craig and Shaka over on our YouTube channel.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back. A 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We've heard some murmurings, haven't we, from some players in the Premier League about their concerns about returning to action. Danny Rose has blown all of those out of the water, certainly not sitting on the fence. This is what the Newcastle player had to say. The government is saying we are bringing football back because it's going to boost the nation's morale. I don't give an expletive about the nation's morale. People's lives are at risk. Football shouldn't even be spoke about coming back until the numbers have dropped massively. Mark Ogden and Don Hutchinson here to discuss that. Mark, I want to start with you. Is this the feeling from a lot of players? Is he an outlier here? What's your understanding?
Well, I can only speak about the people I've spoken to. I spoke at two clubs this week. One of them told me that their player liaison officer had spoken to every player, and every player wanted to come back. Then I spoke to another Premier League club, and they had the same, not the same majority of like 100%, but their team are also desperate to come back. So from what the sense that I get is that the vast majority of players want to play and play as quickly as possible because it's what they know. Now, obviously, there's people like Danny Rose, Raheem Sterling spoken out, Sergio Aguero, I think Todd Cantwell tweeted something, a Norwich player recently. There will be players that are uncomfortable about coming back, but we have to say that it will not come back until the government deems it safe to do so. It's not football trying to drag players along here. So while I respect that the likes of Danny Rose and others don't want to play, the noise that I'm getting is that the vast majority of players want to play and play as soon as possible.
Don, this seems to be the case. I know we talked about it last week. I asked if you were in the situation, would you be fine to come back? And you said, yeah, you'll be chomping at the bit. And there seems to be protocol in place to try and help those players who are maybe hesitant about returning to action.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, take a little example from the K-League. I was watching that. They went back and played a professional game the other day, and their approach to it has been absolutely brilliant. They're playing behind closed doors. The substitutes are not sitting together, not travelling together. And it's a sport at the moment that it is going to be different from the next couple of months, even longer. But we're just going to have to get used to it. And from a personal point of view, I would be gagging to be playing football. I'd want to be back out there. I'd want to be mingling with my friends and playing professional sport because it is a lifeline to all those people that myself and Mark's just mentioned. These guys would get a massive kick out of seeing, and not just football, by the way, all sports. If we can try and get most sports up and running, and I can't wait for the Bundesliga to start this weekend. I'll be keeping a close eye on that. I think it gives the nation a huge lift.
This is it, isn't it? Obviously, there's two sides to this argument, but we can only talk about what we've seen. Last Dance, the ratings have been incredible. UFC as well, the fights of the weekend. Drew a group, big audience. There is that desire there to have live sports back, Mark, and as much as people saying, yes, but how can you focus on sports when all this is going on? There is a very fair point to be made that but people need just a bit of escapism, and sports a great way of providing that.
Yeah, well, you know, life is going on in many different aspects, isn't it? You know, life is on hold in many ways, but in some ways it is going on, and people are getting back to as normal as they can. Now, you know, the one thing I do agree with Danny Rose on is that it's not up to football to provide a morale boost for the nation. That's a higher power thing. You know, that's nothing to do with football. Football may boost people's morale, but you can't bring it back just because it boosts people's morale. You know, let's not forget that there are over 100,000 people in the UK attached to football that are employed by the game. It's not just footballers. It's, you know, it's kit men, it's ground staff, it's electricians, it's caterers. There's so many people relying on football for a living, and not people who are pounds or even more a week. This is people that are on minimum wage that need football to survive, need football to feed the family. So I think we need to get away from this suggestion that it's all about pampered footballers who drive Rolls Royces. This is about an industry that needs to get back, just like every other industry in the UK and the world that needs to get back to business.
And getting back to business is a question as to whether or not it will happen at home stadiums. Of course, we've heard over the last few weeks it's going to be neutral grounds. Now, this is because of the police concerns of safety. That seems to have changed a bit of direction over the last 48 hours, Mark.
The reason why the police have asked for it is because they fear that fans will turn up at grounds. Liverpool fans, for instance, when they win the league, they are concerned that there will be thousands and thousands of fans outside trying to get a glimpse of what's happening on the pitch. So lots of clubs in the bottom six are worried that playing at neutral venues surrenders their home advantage in games, whatever home advantage is worth in a behind-closed-doors game, I'm not sure. Other clubs are saying now that their stadiums are sponsored for millions and millions of pounds by airlines, by big businesses. They need to play at home to not contravene their sponsorship deals. So the Premier League have now gone back to the government and requested that kind of stipulation is overturned, that they will allow the season to be continued at home and away games. So we may see games at Anfield and Old Trafford again this season.
The fans, obviously, the big talking point here, but surely, Mark, if you ask them, you tell them, They should listen, shouldn't they? Or am I being naive?
I think you've been naive, Dan. I think, in an ideal world, fans want to see what's happening. And when Liverpool came back with the European Cup last June from Madrid, 750,000 fans lined the streets of Liverpool. So I think it's wishful thinking to expect fans to stay at home if their team's playing down the road.
But isn't that just tough? Look, hey, you turn up to the stadium, if there's more than X amount of fans, you lose the game. It is done. It is dusted. Surely you have to take that sort of protocol and say to fans that this is what's going to happen, because the neutral venue thing seems to be something that in kind of... It's unnecessary, isn't it? In modern day, you tell someone not to do it, they don't do it. Isn't it that simple?
If it was that simple, then people wouldn't be sunbathing in parks in London when they were told not to. I mean, every weekend, every week, we're seeing people break the rules. The Kyle Walker story at the weekend when he travelled from Manchester to Sheffield to see his family. These are all against the rules, but people break the rules. So I do think that unless the police create a ring of steel, then fans will turn up.
Don, just from a player's point of view, just explain why a neutral venue is so disadvantageous to a home side, considering there's no fans. Surely it's still football, isn't it? Surely the best team should still win.
Yeah, it's a hard one to try and get across. It's the biomechanics and what happens to your muscle memory when you're playing home games and you know where you are on the pitch. And you know, listen, if I take myself back to Upton Park when I was in midfield and I seen Trevor Sinclair running down the right-hand side, I knew the sort of scoreboard was up to the right-hand side towards the goal, and I knew where... All these minute things that probably fans don't really think it matters, and they are percentages. They are 0.5% probably at most. But I think it's just being in your car, not being in a hotel the night before, at the stadium, in familiar surroundings. I think if you looked at all the stats over the years, I think the majority of wins come from home games rather than away victories. But when you start bringing no fans into the equation, it's a hard one to gauge. But I would still say there's a percentage of advantage if you are playing your games at home.
Right then, Mark, it's a question I feel like I ask everyone every time they're on. But what does your gut say? When is action going to return in England?
Well, there's another Premier League meeting next Monday, May the 18th, and they have to come up with a decision then, because they have to tell UEFA when they plan to come back. So I do think the government will relent on the neutral grounds. I think that will be taken off the table. But there are a lot of issues to address, you know, medical concerns of the players, how they're going to decide this season if it doesn't finish, because they are running out of time. But I do think that the Premier League will be back in some form by middle of June. Whether they got enough time to finish the season, I don't know, because we're talking about middle of June without any bumps in the road. In Germany, we've seen players test positive for coronavirus. Brighton have player test positive. If that happens once the season restarts, it'll put everything back again. So I think there'll be a resumption, but whether it finishes, that's anyone's guess.
You mentioned positive tests, but surely Germany have shown us the way. If you test positive, you self-isolate. Meanwhile, you continue to test his teammates. That seems to take away this, if someone tests positive, then that's it. The whole season's done.
Well, the problem is that the Premier League is the Bundesliga. The Bundesliga has a very clear plan. The clubs have signed up to it. We know what's going to happen. In the Premier League, we're still waiting. The government hasn't clarified how things should be done, how they can train. So until the Premier League give us a blueprint as to how they're going to test, how often they're going to test, where they're going to test, we don't know how they're going to deal with things. And that's the problem the Premier League has. There's no clarity in terms of what they're going to do and how they're going to kind of tiptoe through the minefield of coronavirus.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Just a reminder, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge with us tomorrow to look ahead to the return of the Bundesliga. But that brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to Sid. If you want more Craig and Shaka, you fools, you can stay tuned for Extra Time. Craig talks about how he's dealing with his hair during the quarantine. And Shaka and Craig get quite feisty when discussing who's the better cook. Yeah, I know we're desperate, but stay tuned.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Napa Know How!
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa.
because right now, when you order from Napa Online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping on over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Craig Burley and Shaka Hislop with me. With there being no crowds, how much did the atmosphere affect your performance as a player in your careers, Craig?
How much does a crowd atmosphere affect your performance?
Yes.
Difficult to say. I think when you're a younger player or a big and you try to make your way in the game, I think a big crowd can be kind of nerve-wracking to start with. But then once you establish yourself, you just sort of shut it out. But there's no doubt, like when you're on a bit of a forward momentum and you're on top of a team and you're playing well and the crowd gets behind you. Particularly thinking back to like Old Firm games at Celtic Park, then that means something. It does. It sort of gives you a little bit of a boost. But I can't remember playing a game behind closed doors, so I don't really know what that would feel like. But I suppose it can give you a bit of a boost, particularly when you're on a roll.
Shaq?
I've never played behind closed doors. We spoke about this a few weeks ago. I'd actually played in a couple of the town where derbies where the away fans weren't allowed, and that made for a strange atmosphere as well. You need to have the crowd going back and forth, and that adds to the atmosphere, that adds to the excitement. And I think once you've gotten used to the big crowds, to Craig's point, when there are no crowds, it's tough to get yourself really truly motivated. You feed off of that energy. But to Craig's point, I also see how I've also experienced how for younger players and play with the national team players who'd only played in Trinidad and Tobago, to go into some of those Central American countries where the crowd was far more vocal and far more animated, and they kind of shrunk into their shells as well. But once you have that experience, that's you feed off of it, and when it's not there, it hurts your performance.
Shaka, does a goalkeeper get more abuse than anybody else?
I think you hear the abuse more than anybody else. I'm not so sure that it's more than any defenders or midfield players, but it's you just know yours when the ball is up the other end of the field and there's not as much noise. And the thing is, you have to just stand there and take it. You know, the same players behind the goal and same people in the same exact seats, and you know, you have to endure that all game long. Whereas if you're running up and down the sideline, you know, maybe it's different people, you're in front of different sections of the crowd. Some sections may not be as nasty or as vocal as others, so it changes.
They should get a lot of stick, these goalkeepers, shouldn't they? they do sod all. Stood about there, probably 89 out of 90 minutes.
So catch a short, couple of crosses right there,
with sticky
yes.
gloves
we get
on.
More stick. Even when we're in studio, we get more stick than everybody else.
Yeah, no, you're damn right you do. You bloody should do as well. I mean, even those gloves you get are sticky. How the hell a goalkeeper can drop the ball these days with these goalkeeper gloves? You could climb up the side of a building with them like Spider-Man. I mean, it's a joke.
Meanwhile, there's been a lot of comments about our hair. Shaka, me, Danny referred to as three divorced dads on a Skype call, which I thought was pretty on point. It takes us to the next question on Craig. How is Craig so up to date with his hair during this pandemic? I suppose, Craig, it's a good time. It's worked out well for you to have your thinning hairline.
Well, by the way, unless this camera is deceiving, it's grown like wildfire, this hair. I mean, although my wife did say to me last night, how are you keeping your hair so short? But it's a bit like the Film Academy diploma that I had behind me at one point, which I kept secret from you guys. It was my acting skills. What I didn't tell you as well, that also during my football career, I trained as a hairstylist. And so that's why
Wow.
I've been able to Huh? That's why I've been able to keep my hair in check the way I have. And if you noticed, I just filter in some little grey bits here and there just to give me the George Clooney look. And that keeps me going. And I'm pretty happy with my lot at the moment, I have to be honest.
Shaka, you've had some good comments about your hair as well, actually. People are liking it. Yeah.
I am not so sure at all. I am hating this. I can't remember the last time I went this long without cutting my hair. It's been 8 weeks, about.
Well, you've got the easiest hair to cut out the lot of us, isn't it? You just need to take a what number shaver would you take to that? Just give it a little scoot off the back, you know, just shave all the way around, bish bash bosh. It's a bit different for us, particularly for me, you know, because being so stylish.
I was waiting for that.
Not easy. Right,
let's move
on. Clearly care more about my presentation than you do, Craig. The hair stylist in the group.
Let's move on. Shaka, is it more embarrassing to get beaten at your near post or to get nutmegged?
It's more embarrassing to get nutmegged, though maybe people frown on you more if you get beaten at your near post. We give them the old cliche, never get beaten at your near post, but it's just far more embarrassing to get nutmegged.
How would you get nutmegged as a goalkeeper?
If somebody gets close enough to you, you can get nutmegged. Happens all the time. Never happened to me that often.
No, that's because you never come out your box.
You don't have to be out your box to get nutmegged.
But to be fair,
who is the better cook amongst all of you?
Oh,
Craig is probably the best cook, isn't he?
Who?
You.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say that's an easy answer. Yes. Pat myself in the back there. Yeah, I was at it last night again. Cod. I had a nice bit of cod. Got it in a nice glass dish. Bit of rosemary, lemon, butter, little bit of garlic, all that. You know, so, yeah, I was experimenting last night. That's an easy answer. It's definitely me, for sure.
Go on, Jack.
I'll back myself in this competition, in cooking competition. And Craig, as much as he's kind of pat himself on the back and blown his own trumpet, when you start off describing your dish by, put some cod in a glass dish, that tells you all you need to know. The glass dish was his highlight.
Well, I'll tell you what, we need to go, when we finally get back in our studio, we need to have a cook-off of some sort then, live. Because I don't do pre-recorded, edited nonsense. I want live. I want pressure. I want a big crowd. Then we'll see.
I'm ready.
What do you bring to the table, Shaq?
I bring whatever you want. You bring it to the table and I'll cook it.
Let's be honest. We know who the worst one is, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, of course. Yeah. Shepherd Pie, man.
Yeah.
That is it. Thank you very much, boys. ESPN FC. We'll be back tomorrow. Keep your tweets coming in. Until then, goodbye.